Greetings, Kansas City. I got you something for Christmas. No, 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 don't say I shouldn't have. You know, I had to. It's important. No, no, it's not that tablet you wanted. It's not some indulgent candy or even something thoughtful that I knitted for you. It's more practical. Go ahead, open it. Yep, advice for your taxes. Hey, you need it. I'm Javelani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll be joined by a master tax advisor with tips for wrapping up 2011 the right way, with advice for your charitable contributions, your Roth IRA, and that tax filing system you've just been meaning to start but couldn't get to it yet. Join us for tax advice and many happy returns when we return after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. There are changes every year to a convoluted tax code and always several proposals on how to revamp the system, revolutionize the tax base. There was a 999 tax proposal, the e-tax, the earned income tax credit, and lawmakers in Washington now await the fate of the payroll tax extension legislation. The good news, with all the line items, headlines, and numbers, is that you don't have to face taxing situations alone. We got some help for you today. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. H&R Block's Elaine Smith, an enrolled agent and master tax advisor, is that little voice in our heads telling us to get a head start, ease our minds at Christmas time, or at least get prepared. Welcome back to Central Standard, Elaine.
Thanks.
Are you hard at work in the run-up to Christmas?
This is some of the busiest time for tax preparers getting ready for the tax season this year. We're taking lots of classes and finishing up all our final tax update classes so that we have all the latest tax code changes ready for our clients when they come in.
So Christmassy fun, in other words.
Exactly. This is exactly how we like to spend the holidays.
So you're getting up to date on tax code changes and taking classes. What has happened to the changes in the tax code since the last time we talked to you?
There's been a couple of changes and a couple things that happen every year. Things like the standard deduction increased again this year. Exemption amounts for yourself or your dependents has changed. So things like that that just makes those small adjustments to everyone's tax return, we're getting all those updated numbers on. This year, we were lucky in that there weren't a huge number of tax law changes that will impact people, but 2012 will be a little bit different.
Are there any things among those changes you just mentioned that makes it that much more important to get a jump on taxes for April?
You know, I always encourage people to take time now. Maybe you've got holiday vacation from your work, and what better time to spend between Christmas and New Year's but than getting your tax documents together? Take this time now. If you're making those last-minute runs to the Salvation Army to donate your items, put that receipt in a safe place and then go back and find all those other receipts you've been collecting this year.
So take time from work to work on preparing your taxes and going through your shoeboxes or your cabinets or whatever to find the receipts.
Yeah, taking a little bit of time now will save you time in the future and make it a little bit easier for a tax preparer to prepare your return, and will make sure that you don't miss any credits or deductions because you were unable to find that receipt.
Is there a greater percentage of people doing that this year or getting ready for 2012 tax season than you would normally think? It's a hectic holiday season every year with 1,000 things on people's minds. What types of people get a jump?
You know, I've gotten a couple calls this year from a few of my clients getting ready for next year. And those people, I think, are experiencing some life changes. A lot of people have been pretty conservative. They've held off on some moves, maybe have delayed buying something big. And now they're ready to make that step. So they're trying to get some tax planning advice from me now. So when these life changes happen next year, they've got everything they need to make the best decision.
What are the typical concerns you're hearing from clients this early in the game?
Some people are interested in the impacts of buying a new home or selling a home or even renting out a home they've been unable to sell in the last year.
What's going to be particularly cumbersome for everybody this tax season? What's going on right now in the tax code that's going to make it a little bit harder? We'll get to the easy question in a minute, but
The hardest thing will be is planning for 2012. There's a lot of tax credits that expire on December 31st this year that won't be available to you next year. So when you're talking about tax planning, I'm thinking about, you know, buying my first home or expanding my family. What changes do I need to make to my withholdings at work so that I'm best prepared? Those are going to be really hard conversations.
What are some of those changes?
Some things that are expiring in 2012 are things like the tuition and fees deduction. There'll be changes to some other small extender items like the there's a $250 deduction for teachers. Things like that are going away. And unless Congress acts in 2012, there may be some significant changes to people who claim those types of things.
So you won't get to deduct tuition and fees?
Which is different. The tuition and fees deduction is different than some of the education credits that we know and love, like the American Opportunity Tax Credit and the Lifetime Learning Credit. Those are going to still be here.
Do these things offset each other in a sense, though?
You get to pick one or the other, and you get to pick the one that most benefits you.
Well, let's hear some good news. What's the good news? What are some of the changes that are going to make it a little bit easier in the aggregate?
Yep. So this year, people will benefit from a higher standard deduction amount. People will benefit from a higher exemption amount for their children or themselves. People are going to benefit from things like the American Opportunity Tax Credit is still here. So if you're going to school or your kids are in school, you're able to deduct those tuition and room and board and book expenses.
Can you remind us what the cutoff date for an actual income tax fiscal year is for our people getting ready?
Yep. Generally, taxpayers have a January through December 31st fiscal year, which means you file your return on mostly April 15th. But this year, we get a couple extra days, and you get till April 17th.
Wow. Two extra days. That's a Christmas gift coming really early.
It is.
What are the key dates between now and April 17th?
Yep. So if you are someone who makes estimated payments in January 15th, you'll be required to make your final fourth quarter estimated tax payment. And then the next big date is the tax filing day, April 17th, which is also your first quarter estimated tax payment for 2011.
And there are no big changes in state tax or any federal legislation that could affect Missouri or Kansas that we need to be worried about right now?
Nothing really big that we need to be worried about. We're lucky in that both Kansas and Missouri had very, very few tax changes that will impact taxpayers this year.
What items and purchases should we have been keeping track of all year?
You know, the first one is charitable contributions, and I know that might be hard, but get a receipt if you donate goods to an organization or if you've given them cash or a check. The next one is your medical expenses. So medical expenses are deductible on your return. You'll need those expenses if you use your flexible spending account dollars. You'll have till the end of this year to turn all those receipts in so that you don't lose that money in that flexible spending account.
So medical expenses and charitable contributions. Are there any charitable giving considerations as we end the year that people want to squeeze in that they should be thinking about?
Yeah, this is the best time, I think, when people open all their Christmas gifts, they go to the basement and they clean out a bunch of things and they run it over to a charity that week between Christmas and New Year's. That's a great way. Get a receipt from them and put that in a safe place. Things need to be postmarked if you write someone a check by December 31st so that it counts for this year.
You can't just put DEC.31 on the check and you did it in January. That's not going to work.
Right. No, that's not going to work.
Okay. Just checking on that one. What kinds of charitable giving don't count?
You know, the contribution needs to be to a qualified charity. And if you're not sure, the IRS has a listing of those. And it's important to check every now and then because often charities will lose their charitable status because they fail to do some paperwork on their side. So if you're not sure, check. And if you are sure, be sure that you're giving to the qualified charity and that it's within the time frame and that you've gotten a receipt.
How do you determine how much you should be giving this time of year to maybe maximize the benefits on your tax returns come April 17th?
The good news is there's no limit to how much you can deduct in charitable contributions. So and there's no time where that benefit starts to kind of decrease for you. So it's whatever you want to do and whatever charities mean the most to you. The important thing is just to document and keep a good record of all those.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm your host, Jabalani LaFall. We're in the studio live with Elaine Smith, an enrolled agent and master tax advisor, helping us get a jump on tax season coming up on April 17, 2012. That's the filing deadline. For our taxpayers in radio land, do you have questions about new legislation or are you looking for tips on tax preparation? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is always an option as well. Elaine, how about small business owners or sole proprietorships tracking their expenses and preparing to file? Is there a different fiscal year for them? Are there different filing considerations for them?
There are, and that's a great question. We've had a lot of people start their own businesses here in the last couple of years. If you are a sole proprietor, you're the one that owns and operates the business, you generally have the same fiscal year January through December as you are as an individual taxpayer. If you do incorporate or create a partnership, you get to kind of choose your tax year based on your business and choose a tax year that works for your business. For example, tax businesses generally have their fourth quarter end at the end of April, since the majority of their business is done during the last 4 months of that time frame.
Well, I'm a sole proprietorship, so I'm going to get my questions in and help people in Radioland listening to you and me right now. So I'm going to go through maybe a couple of line items here and let me know what changes will be taking effect. Mileage and automobile expenses for small business owners and sole proprietors?
Yep, the mileage rate is about 55 cents a mile. It has it can change as the gas prices change, but we'll just keep tabs on that. And it's at that. Because it can change mid-year, it's important to keep your mileage for every month and not just a total for the whole year.
So track those mileages every month.
Yes.
What about work from home expenses? Is that going to be changing, or are we going to get any new amenities? What's going on with that?
Not changing, but it is highly scrutinized by the IRS. So if you have an office in your home, it's important that you have a qualified office in your home, which means there's a dedicated space that you work and nothing else goes on in there. No TV.
What makes it qualified?
It has to be a dedicated space that you do your primary business in. You might meet with clients there. You might use it for storage if you have inventory, but you don't watch TV. The computer's not used by other people in the family. It's only for your work.
On that charitable contributions question, we have a question from Rob. Is there a limit on the amount of charitable contributions that's deductible? I think you cleared that up, but clear it up for Rob.
Yep. Generally, it's generally unlimited for someone limited by their income.
Right.
And some charities, at some point, there's a 50% limitation on types of charities, and it's 50% of your income. So don't feel limited to donate items. If you do donate large valued items like artwork or collectibles, you'll need an appraisal done to determine the value of that. But otherwise, generally, a receipt will do.
So the higher contribution, the higher the paperwork, or what?
Yeah, yes. If it's a high valued item, artwork, collectibles, things like that, antiques, you'll need a qualified appraisal done.
Since you're used to convoluted tax talk, we're going to get back to that small business owners and sole proprietorships. Internet services in your dedicated space at home, is that changing?
It's not changing. So if you're paying for internet service for your home office, for your access to your computer, maybe your phone is on that, your all-in-one fax machine is kind of coming through there, you can dedicate that internet service, that broadband service for your business.
And then, of course, classes, conferences, and courses that help you better yourself are also writer-offable.
Right.
I just made that up.
It's a great word. They're all deductible as long as they relate to your business and they would be ordinary and necessary in your line of work. Even travel to those businesses if they're outside of the city and you've had to travel, take a plane, stay in a hotel, and incurred expenses that way, you can include some of those expenses as well.
What would an auditor be looking for to prove or disprove that your home is a dedicated space?
You know, they're going to look at what is all in that office space. Is there a TV? Then it's probably not qualified. Is there a computer that's accessible by everyone in the household? Or is there another computer available for everyone in the household and your office has a dedicated computer?
Okay, Elaine, I'm going to twist you a little bit here. What if you are a blogger and your job is to follow the news in real time or listen to programs such as, I don't know, central standard. So you have a radio and a TV for that sole purpose. Does that count?
That could be eligible if it's ordinary and necessary for someone in that line of business. So if you can make that case that that TV is only used during the times that you're blogging and working, then you might be able to deduct that as an eligible expense.
You, Elaine Smith, are fair for that assertion. We're going to go to Amy in KC mode.
USB.
Actually, this is Glenn. Glenn, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, thank you. My question is, and thank you for the program, what is the bang for buck that you get for charitable contributions? If I give $100 worth of goods or cash, what would be my return in regards to the tax rate? And second to this question is, apologies for interrupting, does it matter what my personal income is in regards to what that is?
You know, that's a great question. And people ask me, you know, things like, does it even matter? You know, should I even put that $100 on there? The amount of bang for your buck that you get is based on your marginal tax rate. So your income does matter for your second part of your question. Whatever your marginal tax rate is, if you're in the 25% tax bracket, if you give $1,000 or $100, your kind of reduction in tax is 25% of that.
So it's based on where my income level is in regards to everyone else in the United States?
Where your income is related to the different tax brackets.
Well, that's okay. So if I'm in the 40 percentile tax bracket, whatever that is, my taxable contributions are 40% of whatever it is that I give.
That your reduction in tax, yes, is whatever your tax rate. A lot of people are in the 15 or 25% tax bracket, so they see a 15 or 25% benefit on their deductions.
I see. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Glenn, for your contribution to this conversation. And we're going to go to Amy, who we originally wanted to go to. Hello, Amy.
Hi. I am a sole proprietorship, and I always use TurboTax and prepare my own taxes. But I'm always tempted to research other tax software programs, so I wonder if there's any measurable difference between some of the competing software.
Elaine, personal biases aside now.
Right. So
tell her about how an average tax program works.
They all, the tax program that works best for you is the one that you can easily understand and get help with. So H&R Block obviously offers tax software as well, as so do other tax firms. And every year somebody does a comparison between the two. What I will tell you is that if you're having questions or doubts, what you can do is take the return that you prepared yourself and have it reviewed by a professional. They generally will do that for free or for a flat fee for you. And that will kind of help you understand what you're getting right, what you're missing out on, where some other opportunities might be. And they can also do a little bit of education for you on things like depreciating equipment, amortizing startup expenses, things like that. That you can, if you want to, continue to do your own return. At least you've been educated and you've had your return reviewed.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. Amortize. Please define that for our listening audience.
So it's kind of like depreciation, except for things that aren't assets. So in small businesses, there's generally a startup expense. You know, you're getting the space, you're doing some advertising before you're open, hiring staff before you open. You don't get to deduct those all the first year. You have to spread the cost out over several years.
We're talking taxes on Central Standard with Elaine Smith, an enrolled agent and master tax advisor with a firm you may have heard of. It's called H&R Block. We're looking for your questions, contributions, anxieties, curiosities. 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Carol emails us at centralstandard@kcur.org with the following question. My husband lost his job in 2010, she says, and finally found a job in another city. She stayed in KC for her job and kept the kids in school here, I'm assuming in KC. Can we deduct, Carol asks, all of my husband's expenses as job-related costs, rent, travel, etc.? That's a very good question.
It's a great question, and unfortunately it's happening, you know, more and more as people have been displaced from their jobs. They're taking jobs in other cities away from their families just to, you know, continue to provide for the family. Unfortunately, where your husband works is his tax home, and so his mileage between his physical residence or your residence and his place of work aren't deductible expenses.
Wow.
It's unfortunate, but what is good is that he does have a job and that he is now working for the family, because collecting unemployment usually does not fill the gap for people to keep their family where they are and in the schools they are.
Is there any way to get around that as far as maybe squeezing into relocation expenses or anything like that?
You know, if he was fortunate enough, he might have been eligible for some relocation expenses from his company, and those would have been generally tax-free dollars.
Tax-free?
Yes.
Catherine in Parkville, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. I had a question. If I missed paying my estimated quarterly taxes, can I pay a lump sum at the end of the year and avoid a penalty?
That's a great question. You know, the last thing small business owners tend to remember is the date their estimated tax payments are due. So you can pay late and you can make a lump sum payment at the end, but you're not guaranteed to avoid the penalty. The penalty works is that it's a pay-as-you-go tax system. And so as you earn money, you're expected to make tax payments. And when you make a lump sum at the end, there could be a small penalty for that time between when you made money and that you paid taxes.
Oh, okay. Great. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Catherine, for your question. Talk about Catherine's conundrum, if you will. What is the benefit of waiting, and what are the costs of waiting?
You know, so the benefit of waiting is that you're holding on to your money as long as possible and not paying it over in taxes before you absolutely need to. The risk of waiting too long or not paying enough when you do wait is that there's usually a penalty, which is just more tax. And that's one thing you always want to avoid, is paying more than you need to.
All right. We got Diane in Kansas City, Kansas.
Hello?
Diane? Yes. You're on Central Standard.
Yes, I'm an avid couponer, and I donate thousands of dollars worth of stuff every year that I'm able to get with coupons at a much reduced rate. I've always been told that coupons are considered legal tender, and therefore you can write off the amount for the coupons as far as the receipt goes. But I've always kind of wondered, to hear it from a professional, whether that's accurate or not.
Coupon loopholes. Take it away, Elaine.
You know, that is a great question, because I myself am probably not as avid, but I believe in the value of coupons. So we clip coupons at our house on Sunday, and we organize and sort and build our grocery list based on that. So your deductible expenses, you can deduct what you paid for the item. I think it's a great question that you have about the value of the coupon, and I do not know that answer, but I know that we could find that out with our Tax Institute staff back at H&R Block. So I am now definitely interested in finding out the answer to your question.
Diane, you've started some research here with our tax master.
Yes, I appreciate to hear the answer.
Thank you. Amy writes in to ask, for things such as solar panels, do you get money back if the tax credit exceeds your taxable income?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And just so people understand, there are two kinds of tax credits. One that's limited to the amount of tax that you have, and one that's called refundable, which means even if it zeroes out all of your tax liability, you still get money back. So the tax credit for home improvements to your home, things that are more substantial, not like water heaters, but things like solar panels, wind turbines, geothermal water heaters, those types of things are eligible for a energy improvement tax credit, but it is not refundable. So you're going to be limited to the amount of tax liability that you have for the year.
And that's a good question. So the sun shines on everybody with the solar panels.
Exactly.
Sarah tweeted us at KCURCST, our Twitter handle, KCURCST. She says she got married this year. Will she get more money back on a return as a result of her lovely nuptials?
That's a great question. I love life changes. People get married, they move, they have new jobs, babies. There is always a tax impact to that. So getting married doesn't necessarily mean that you will get a refund, but you start to benefit from things by being married, filing jointly on your return. The standard deduction is higher. You get to claim both individuals. Generally, there is some breaks for being married, filing jointly, rather than having two individual taxpayers if you combined your income that way with your deductions. So, you know, my advice to her is to get some assistance from somebody, have them do a review of maybe their two returns individually and do an estimate of what it would be filing jointly and see what kind of benefits that she's going to get.
We got Harry in Blue Springs. Welcome to Central Standard, Harry.
If you're at the age where you have to take a distribution from your IRA, can that be a direct transfer to the charitable institution? That's directly from, say, the case of a brokerage account to a church, and then you get the entire amount for tax benefit?
This is great, and this is a new thing that happened last year and continues this year. So what you're talking about is someone who has an IRA that's at the age where they're required to take distributions from their IRA. Required. If they don't, there's a big penalty. And some people don't need that income. So what they can do is a trustee-to-trustee transfer out of their IRA to a charitable organization. So they've met the requirement of taking the money out, but they get to benefit the charity of their choice by directing that money to them. So what happens is you don't get a charitable deduction on your tax return, but you do avoid any penalty of not making that required minimum distribution, and you have the benefit of taking the required minimum distribution and getting credit for that.
So you get credit, but you don't get the penalty for early withdrawal.
You don't get a penalty for not taking the distribution out, but you don't get to take a charitable contribution, but you probably didn't need it anyway.
Is this what you're planning to do, Harry?
Yes, and I understand it has to be done by December 31st because the law expires then, and the Congress, the way they operate, it probably won't be acted on to take it forward another year. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Thank you, Harry. Elizabeth writes in with a tip. If a taxpayer earned $50,000 or less in 2011, they're eligible to utilize free tax preparation service by the Casey Cash Coalition at volunteer income tax assistance sites around the KC metro area. Federal and state returns are filed electronically for free by volunteer tax preparation specialists using the software provided by the IRS. Sounds like an ad. Is this true?
You know, that is very true. There are volunteer income tax assistance places all over the city. There's even one here at the UMKC campus where if people who meet certain income requirements can have their return prepared and filed for free for them. And it's a great resource for people who don't have a lot of income but don't want to do it themselves either.
That's a good thing to be able to do, get it done for free.
It is. And if you're not sure, you're new to that process again, what you can do is take the return that they've prepared, have it reviewed by someone else. Either they'll charge a very small rate or it may be free. At H&R Block, we review returns for free and have it double checked.
We got Mike in Shawnee. Mike.
Hey, good morning. Hi. My question concerns deductibility of medical expenses. I've had quite a few lately, but my understanding is that there's a threshold, an income percentage threshold, that you have to exceed before you can start deducting those expenses. Is that still the case?
That is the case. The medical expenses are deductible. If you don't take the money out of like a health savings account or a flexible spending account, you can deduct them on your tax return. The income threshold is 7.5%, and everything that exceeds 7.5% of your adjusted gross income is deductible on your tax return, and you get benefit for.
Okay. That's what I need. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Does it count if you just use your bank statement to track relevant expenses, Elaine?
The bank statement is not something that the IRS would accept if you were audited. You need to have a detailed receipt that shows the date, the purchase, what you purchased, the amount, the business purpose that you used it for, if it was meals, who you were with, and so something that's a little more detailed.
So you need receipts as well as a bank statement.
A receipt, bank statement, and then usually some extra documentation.
Elaine Smith is an enrolled agent and master tax advisor at H&R Block. She's our guest today here on Central Standard. She's helping us navigate our ABCs and 123s of the coming W-2s, 1099s, and W-4s. You will see. Are you confused? I know I am. And now it's time for what many of us are hoping for this season, and in general, a tax break. And more tax talk on Central Standard when we return. Meanwhile, give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook and Twitter are also options. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. The U.S. tax code expands rapidly, warp speed, fast, nearly at the rate of the universe itself. And for that reason, it's never too early to get a jump start on the coming tax season for 2012 to 2011 tax return season. And with us to help us out with that is Elaine Smith, an enrolled agent and master tax advisor with a firm you might have heard of. It's local. It's called H&R Block, and she's here for that. For our taxpayers in Radio Land, if you have questions about new legislation, you're looking for tips on tax preparation, tax deductions, and the like, call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Now, beginning with this filing year coming up, what can you no longer write off, like forever? Elaine.
That's a good question. You know, there are some things that have been limited over the last couple of years and that will expire at the end of the year. One of those is energy improvements. So you might remember a few years ago, we benefited from being able to take a credit for thousands of dollars of energy improvements we made to our home. This year, you can take a credit of up to $500. It's limited to $200 for windows of energy improvements that you make to the home, but it expires on December 31st. So you need to act fast if you want to take
that. December 31st. As in this December 31st?
Yes, so just a few weeks. So if you're going to make a few last energy improvements to your home, get them in now, because then after December 31st, that credit is gone.
So you can't just paint your walls green and say, I went green. Give me tax breaks.
That would be nice. But things like water heaters, insulation, if you have a drafty window, now's the time to get some insulation in there and get it taken care of so that you can take advantage of that credit.
And you can put those expenses down.
Yes.
On there. Elizabeth writes in. Oh, we already heard from Elizabeth. We're going to go to Sarah in KCK.
Hi, I just had a question. My husband and I are just about to start a job where we're employed by an agency, but we travel all throughout the United States, and we get a stipend that's not taxed. So I just didn't know, do we need to be saving receipts and be able to show that we're using that non-tax stipend for living expenses?
Yeah, that's a great question. A lot of people have taken jobs where they are traveling a lot more than they used to, and it depends on what kind of plan the firm has. So if you're someone who gets a flat amount of money to use for living expenses, you'll document that amount of money and then all of your living expenses. If there are things that exceed that amount that are expenses for travel to your various business sites, you may be able to deduct those. If it's something that exceeds, if you get a stipend and you don't necessarily spend it all, you might have to report that back as well as now income.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Amy commented on KCUR.org saying, I have heard that in 2012, custodial parents will have the ability to claim their child regardless of what is outlined in their divorce decree. For example, a dad that claims their child in the odd years can lose out on claiming his child as a dependent for that year if the mother wants to take him away. Is this true? Can you elaborate on this? There's a lot of young and the restless sort of convoluted stuff here, and probably equally as elaborate on the tax form.
Yeah, the tax code gets complex when we have children of divorced or separated parents. It used to be that we could look at the divorce decree to determine who was eligible to claim the child. Now there's a separate form that needs to be filled out by both the custodial and the non-custodial parent. And if the non-custodial parent's going to be claiming the child, they'll need to attach that form to their tax return that's signed by the custodial parent, kind of waiving the exemption to the non-custodial parent.
Does the other parent then get to write off child support or no?
No, child support is not deductible. The only thing that would be deductible for the payor is alimony payments. So if you're making alimony payments and it's stated in your divorce decree as alimony payments, you can deduct those. The person receiving those alimony payments are going to report that as income.
And so then they have to pay against that.
Exactly. You're going to pay income taxes on your alimony that you receive.
So the government gets hubby and wifey in that case, right?
Exactly.
We got Aaron in Olathe. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hi there. Thank you. I have sort of a three-part question regarding medical expenses. We had several thousand dollars in medical expenses this year, but then my husband just incurred a $6,000 dental bill. I was wondering if dental bills are also included as a tax deduction. And secondly, am I able to still do TurboTax when I'm itemizing medical bills? And thirdly, what paper trail do I need to have if if I'm using all these medical expenses to try and get a tax break.
So let's flip this and take this one by one.
Sure.
Got the dental bill.
So the dental is a qualified medical expense. So if you have dental, orthodontics, prescriptions, medical, anything like that is a qualified medical expense. What the ever amount you took out of pocket is the amount that you'll be able to claim as a deduction.
Now, TurboTax.
I don't know about TurboTax. I know that our H&R Block at Home software does allow you to itemize deductions, as well as probably some other software as well.
Way to toe the line. And the last one is the paper trail. How does she do that?
Yep. So what you would need is generally the receipt from the dentist or a medical provider and probably the explanation of benefits from your insurance company showing the part that they paid and the part that was your responsibility.
We got Steve from Liberty. Welcome to Central Standard.
Hello there. Thank you, and I appreciate you taking my call. I have a question about volunteering. I spend a lot of time volunteering with different nonprofit organizations. I travel to events that they have and spend 3 and 4 and sometimes 8 hours working, volunteering for them. Is any of that considered tax deductible?
So your mileage to the charity and any mileage that you incur while volunteering is deductible. It's at about 14 cents a mile this year. So track that mileage. Your time volunteering is not a deduction. So money you give, goods you give, and the mileage you incur are all deductible for volunteering.
So time is not money in this case, right, Elaine?
That's correct.
However, if you bring in lunch or you drive someone somewhere and you drive in and drive around running errands in that volunteer capacity, as Steve does, you can write that off.
That's correct.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. We got Melissa in Olathe.
Hi. My question's in the similar line. We do a Christmas in October house every year, which my husband's co-workers provide the labor. But we were wondering, can we deduct the materials that we actually purchased to take to improve the home for that charity?
Yeah, that's great. My family does the Christmas in October, too. So any materials that you have to purchase, things from the hardware stores, paintbrushes, drop cloths, I usually end up painting because that's the easiest. All of those would be deductible expenses that you could put on your tax return.
Okay, thanks.
Mike in Overland Park, welcome to Central Standard.
Yes, good morning. I had a quick question. I guess just some clarification surrounding the property tax that we pay in Kansas every year on our vehicles that we operate as a family. Is there any benefit or kind of what's the guidelines for reporting that or not reporting that as far as it's concerned on your yearly tax?
That's a great question. So one of the itemized deductions that you can deduct is personal property taxes that you pay. And in Kansas, you pay it twice per year. You pay half at one point in the year and half at the other half of the year. So you just need to make sure that you capture both halves. You don't forget one and put that amount as property taxes that you pay on that line on your Schedule A.
Okay. Thank you.
Elaine, what advice do you have for folks who say, this is the year I'll track my receipts? Do you have any organizational systems to recommend as they get prepared?
I do. I tell people, keep it really simple. It doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't have to be a multi-expandable file system. Get a red folder, something that stands out on your desk among all of the other clutter that is usually there. Anything that you think might be tax-related, it's a medical, it's a charitable, it's the kid's school, it's daycare, just put it in the red folder. If you could just get everything in one spot, then when you take that to get your taxes done, we can sort it out for you into the various types of deductions.
All right, we got Phil in KCK. Phil, welcome to Central Standard.
Howdy. I'm retired on an annuity, but I do occasional little odd jobs for people. Never exceeds $50 a month. Is that something I'm supposed to be reporting somewhere?
So people that have kind of side jobs or side businesses, the rule says you're to report all of your worldwide income. So what you need to do is think, are you doing this for a business or for a hobby? Because those two things get treated slightly different. If you're doing it as a business, you would report all of your income and subtract all of your expenses. If it's a hobby, you kind of put it in it, you put it on this line on the front page of your tax return, and it's not subject to self-employment tax.
Thanks.
So you have to report all income, even if Phil is getting five bucks a week. You got to report that.
The rule is all your worldwide income. So even if you go to another country and win $1 million.
Well, I would assume that you would stay maybe in that country.
That could be a good tax advice.
How do we know which receipts are worth the trouble of keeping throughout the year or worth the trouble of scrambling for as the year comes to a close, Elaine?
Things that related to your child's daycare or arrangements you've had to make while you work to watch your children. Things related to your work, if you've had to take a class or a computer course that your employer didn't pay for, that would be something you'd want to keep. And then anything like medical or charitable, those are the big ones. And if you're not sure, it never hurts to put it in the red folder and then just ask about it when you get your taxes done.
Speaking of your magical red folder, is it important, Elaine, this time of year to maybe start going through past returns, seeing what you missed as a sort of preparation, seeing what you can do differently this year? What are your tips on that?
Yeah, you know, the tax code changes every year. It's very complex. So it's not uncommon to see people miss something on a prior year return. Your returns are open for 3 years that you can go back and amend or correct an error that you've made. So you can take those 3 years worth of return and have them reviewed or looked at and determine if there was something that you missed that you could go back and put on and get yourself some more money back.
Happy holidays to you all. We're hitting you with an early gift today. Tax advice. Elaine Smith, enrolled agent and master tax advisor with H&R Block, is here. I'm Jabalani LaFall, your host, a taxpaying citizen. And this is Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org, where you can write off pledge donations for great programming like this. We're going to go to Patrick in Independence.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Central Standard.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just have two questions that are related. I stopped working on the 30th of September and became qualified as disabled on the 31st of October. And I was wondering if there is any kind of deduction for that allowed. And the other question is, I also receive a small pension. And do I, next year, will I have to file on that? Because I don't believe I have to file on disability received. Is that correct?
So the disability income is generally tax-free income, depending on the nature of your disability and where you're collecting it from. You may have medical expenses related to your disability, so you'll want to be sure to include that on your tax return. Especially if your income is lower, it might be easier to reach that 7.5% threshold we mentioned earlier. Depending for next year, if you're collecting a little bit of pension and possibly some disability, you'll have to just look to see if you're required to file or not. Also, some people who are not required to file because their income is too low can still benefit from some tax credits and deductions. So even though you're not required to file, you may be able to get a refund of taxes that were withheld, which would be a benefit to filing even if you're not required.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Patrick. Deborah comments on KCUR.org. As a micro business owner, new in 2009 because of a layoff, how is taxation different from a sole proprietor versus a limited liability company, sole proprietor versus LLC? We talked about that earlier. That's going to be a reoccurring theme, Elaine. You mentioned lots of changes from taxes, personal changes that people are going through this time of year that may affect their tax filing preparation. So,
and
tell
I think
us about that.
There's a lot of confusion about being a sole proprietor and creating this LLC, a limited liability company or corporation. The LLC part protects your liability at the state level and is not a federally recognized business arrangement. So unless you've incorporated or created a partnership agreement with somebody or you're working in business with someone else, you're probably still a sole proprietor. So you can be Elaine Smith, Inc., LLC, and still file as a sole proprietor.
So that's the big myth, that an LLC protects you at the federal level as well in terms of income tax. You can't create a separate entity. Even if you have an LLC, you'll still be considered, you know, a private citizen, essentially.
For tax paying purposes, unless your business is incorporated, you're probably still a sole proprietor, which is fine.
Well, here's an interesting question from Marion Grandview. She's a female small business owner. Does she get any special benefits or deductions based on being a female small business owner?
There aren't any special tax credits or deductions for businesses owned by females or other minority business owners. But sometimes it does give you the opportunity to get tax-free grant dollars to help expand your business. So you may be eligible for some of those, and the important thing is just to track and record where you're getting those grant dollars so that those can be recorded and kept with all your business records in case the IRS does come calling.
And Laura in Topeka, Kansas wants to know, how long should she hold on to her old tax returns, parting in such sweet sorrow?
It is. You know, I say hold on to them forever, but generally the advice is about 7 years, but certainly no shorter than 3 years. Because like I said, for 3 years, those returns are open for audit and examination. So you'll want to hold on to those. If you own a business, you'll want to probably just keep those tax returns for forever or much longer.
We're talking tax today with Elaine Smith, an enrolled agent and master tax advisor from H&R Block. She's helping us through our taxing situations here on Central Standard. Speaking of write-offs, write in with your questions and comments at centralstandard@kcur.org with your questions and concerns as well. And, of course, call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. And, again, our email is centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option, and at KCURCST is our Twitter handle there. What are some changes, Elaine, with retirement income and investment account rollovers? We heard from a man earlier who's going to roll over some or maybe even all of his retirement income into a charitable fund for a church. So what changes are we seeing in income and investment account rollovers for the coming year?
There's some good reminder advice for people who took advantage of a special thing we had last year. Last year, you might remember that we could roll over money from a traditional to a Roth account and take the tax that you would normally pay on that and spread it over 2 years. This is your first year. So if you're someone who took advantage of that special provision last year, you didn't pay any taxes on that rollover last year, this year when you file your tax return, half of that tax balance is due. So remember to put that on your tax return.
And I'm going to hit you with something ripped from the headlines. The Senate passed the 1099 repeal amendment this year. How does that play going forward? Very important for independent contractors. How does that play?
It is. And if you remember, there was going to be a mandate where everyone was going to have to issue 1099s to any other corporation that they paid money to. So that was repealed. That really simplifies things for business owners.
Repealing the 1099 simplifies things for business owners. How so?
The way the rule was written, even if you went to a company like Walmart or Staples and bought some office supplies from them, you would have to issue that corporation a 1099 for the products and services that you received.
Whoa.
That went away, thankfully. So that really reduces the paperwork requirement, especially on small business owners who are already burdened with running a business. We've just reduced the paperwork that they would need to be required to file.
So how does that play going forward now that the paperwork's reduced and streamlined?
The old rules are still in effect. So if you pay someone $600 or more, you're required to issue them a 1099 for their services. But that doesn't apply to corporations that you pay money to or when you buy products.
We got Jeff in Kansas City. Jeff, welcome to Central Standard.
Hi, thank you. This last year, we had a flex account for our child care expenses. And I just wanted to know if that makes us ineligible for the child care tax deduction.
Yep, that's great. And not enough people use that flexible spending account for daycare expenses. So you've done a great thing to avoid taxes there. What happens is that you're eligible. If you have one child, you would not be eligible for any more dependent care tax credit, which is a credit that people can get for their daycare expenses if they didn't put money into a flex account. If you have two or more children, then you are eligible for some dependent care credit, not all of it, but some dependent care credit, and still have used your up to $5,000 of flex dollars.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Carol in Prairie Village, welcome to Central Standard.
Yeah, I had emailed earlier about my husband living in another city, and so we have basically we're supporting two households. Is there ever any advantage to doing married filing separately?
That's a great question. Generally, married filing separate is not the best tax filing status for people. Things like earned income tax credit is completely disallowed. Other credits are reduced. But the only way to know for sure is that you can do your tax return both ways. Put it together, married filing separate, do it married filing joint, and honestly, just pick the best one.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Carol. That's an example of actionable radio. She gets the answer that she wants, and then she calls in for a follow-up. So we're batting 1,000 here on Central Standard today with this tax question. Here's a big tax question going forward. Are you guys at H&R Block watching the payroll tax debate currently raging in the United States Congress? How does that play out on either side of the equation?
You know, we are definitely watching that very closely because we need to know so that we can tell our clients what to expect. We don't know what's going to happen, but if Congress fails to act, people will see a reduction of 2% in their wages next year. So someone making about $50,000, that's about $1,000 of income that they would be impacted by next year.
And if they do act, then they'd actually get the benefits.
They would get the benefit. It would look a lot like this year. There was also debate of what percent to reduce Social Security by again. So we'll stay close to that and obviously update everyone when we have the information.
What does that do for you as a tax preparation specialist? Does it sort of hold you up as well?
Nothing that would prevent you from filing your tax return, but giving people advice or business owners who have employees that need to make those payroll tax deposits to the government, anything like that, we tell them, you know, wait and see, and we'll let them know as soon as that we know so we can take action on that side.
For anyone listening right now, what are the two most important things to do right now before they settle in for the holiday season?
Max out your retirement contributions. Before December 31st, max out your 401k if you can. Make a contribution to your IRA so that you can deduct that. And the second one is if you're going to make charitable contributions, do it by the end of December 31st and get a great receipt.
Sort of taking it to the max, so to speak.
Exactly.
Elaine Smith is an enrolled agent and master tax advisor with a firm that is pretty well known locally, H&R Block. Her advice is a present to you today here on Central Standard. Elaine, thank you for coming and happy holidays to you.
Thank you.
And tune in tomorrow for a look at holiday-themed collaboration between artists and musicians. It's called A Light Goes On. Plus, we speak with Todd Marks of Consumer Reports magazine about the fate of lousy gifts this time of year. We had help from our multimedia producer, Tamika Weatherspoon. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with a look at the best children and youth books of 2011. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.